While reading history, I pause to take a sigh about the land Afghanistan, where empires go to die. Alexander the Great, he tried and failed. The Mongols, they did too. The British and the Russians, they got their ass kicked too. America's been there many years, and I ask myself why we don't learn from history, where empires go to die. They say it's terrorism, that's political malarkey. Just follow where the money goes to a corporate oligarchy. The food crops they once grew with a plow and a hoe been turned into opium poppies, growing row on row. Our infrastructure's crumbling, our social structure too. It's a corporate scam, they don't give a damn while screwing over me and you. Outrage, I don't hear no public cry about sending young men and women where empires go to die. We lost people and treasure in Vietnam, and there still ain't no upside. We're doing the same in a no-win game where empires go to die. It's a new world order agenda with a demonic rising tide. They want America's soul in a deep dark hole where empires go to die.
You can advertise your business on Night Dreams Talk Radio, and you will be heard worldwide. Why not contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com?
We're here to make you feel
good. Hi, Tom Davis here with Metatron Power and Light. We'd like to thank everyone for all the positive emails and responses to our music. Our music can be found on Amazon, Spotify, YouTube, and all digital outlets, and is featured on Night Dreams Talk Radio with Gary Anderson.
Metatron Power and Light is a band that deals with esoteric subjects, the paranormal, and other topics that engage the spirit and mind. Visit MetatronPowerAndLight.com to learn more.
We are facing a time of great change, and the future is unwritten. But when we come together and seek answers, we expand our awareness until we begin to see the unseen. Uncovering secrets allows us to develop the knowledge we will need to shape our future and control our destiny.
Stay safe, stay indoors, and listen to us.
The views, opinions, and representations expressed on the Night Dreams Talk Radio Network and its website are those of the hosts, guests, and participants, and are not necessarily those of or endorsed by the network, its affiliated stations and broadcasts, the management, other hosts, or advertisers of the network. The shows found on the Night Dreams Talk Radio Network can, but do not necessarily, promote any particular lifestyle, belief, religion, political affiliation, or other personal practice. These shows are for entertainment purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, and or claim any cure of disease or condition or give any medical or legal advice. Coming to you from some far point station, like a cosmic tumbleweed, both north and south of the Pleiades, here's your host, Gary Anderson.
Well, good evening, good morning, depending on your time zone. Down here at the harbor, it's been raining cats and dogs and turtles, too. Ah, I can't believe it's already Friday. The week has just moved so fast. Maybe we're in some type of a time warp or something like that. Well, the U.S. Navy is experimenting with drone ships, huge ships. And what they're doing, they're unmanned. And there's a lot of them. The latest one is actually has sailed over 6,000 miles without any problems. The only time there was any manned crew on it when it went through the Panama Canal. Maybe that is going to be our future with ships and stuff like that. I don't know. Well, tonight, if you're into, well, scary stories, you came to the right place. Tom Ogden is going to be talking, well, some scary road stories, you know, like trucker stories and other things. James, tell us a little bit about him.
Well, our guest tonight is Tom Ogden, and he is one of the leading authors on ghosts and the paranormal both. Now, Tom has consulted for many TV shows and is a world-renowned lecturer. He is also a professional magician for 40 years. Now, Tom is at the top of his craft as both a magician and as a writer of the paranormal.
Well, Tom, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and it is good to be back, Gary. It's been maybe half a year or so that we've had a chance to talk.
Oh, yeah. I got to ask you a question. A sure. friend of mine, Ron Fitzgerald, he is a magician in the dark realm. And, you know, besides swallowing razor blades on a string, which I don't know how he could actually do it without slicing himself up, the other trick he does is the coffin, you know, where he puts a beautiful lady in a coffin and then sets it on fire.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, how dangerous?
I almost got fired from a circus once for doing that trick.
Why?
Well, you remember Ringling Brothers had a great tent fire back in the early part of the 20th century? Apparently, you shouldn't have flaming coffins in the center ring. He just didn't like the visual of it, of having an audience watching that, because it wasn't on stage. It was in a, you know, inside of a tent. Now, of course, today's circus tents are all fire resistant, and it wasn't that much fire, but still. But the girl was not in any danger, fortunately.
Oh, wow. I mean, but again, how can you set a coffin on fire with somebody in it without, well, worrying about them getting, you know, hurt one way or the other, if not by just smoke or something?
Actually, I was a bit concerned by that, because when you go in a tightly enclosed, we had practiced it outside. We're a circus. But when you got inside, the smoke and fumes do not, you know, spread out evenly. They go up and around. They go up and then curve down the sides of the tent, the odor. And it smelled much worse than it was. Fortunately, it wasn't burning flesh. It was just kerosene.
Yeah, but still scary. I wouldn't want to be, you know, James, I know, would volunteer to go into it. But I tell you, I would not do it. I tell you, I'd be scared to death. And again, how about these people who take a whole bunch of the old razor blades, you know, the double-edged razor blades, and put them on a string and tie like a dozen or 16 of them on a string and swallow them? Are they actually swallowing those things?
I'll tell you whether I did or not.
Well, evidently, I don't think you did, because you wouldn't be able to talk. You wouldn't have a tongue.
Well, there are many ways that it could be done. But I did do it when I was a teenager, but took it out of my act, not because I thought there was danger to me, but I didn't want a kid going home getting daddy's singer, you know, double-edged razor blade, and try it for themselves. So I was more concerned about, I hate to say at 15 I was concerned about liability. I was concerned about a person hurting themselves. But the trick goes back long before razor blades existed. It used to be a feature in Harry Houdini's act for many years. And he would take about 50 regular sewing needles. And he would swallow them at first, like a half a dozen, one at a time, and then in groups of six or whatever. then a long piece of thread. He would invite someone up from the audience who would, well, he would, the spectator would inspect Houdini's mouth just to make sure, you know, he wasn't hiding anything. Houdini would swallow the needles and the piece of string. The guy would check again. As a matter of fact, the flashlight that he would hand the person to be able to see inside his mouth recently went up for auction and went for a couple of $1,000s.
Oh, wow.
And then he thanked the person. He went back down, and Houdini started pulling the thread out. And after he got about a foot of thread out of his mouth, the first needle popped out, just like the razor blade trick, popped out threaded on the thread. And then he keeps pulling out till all 50 needles came out, you know, spaced about 4 inches apart. And what was so dramatic the way he did it is he, you know, they played with a live orchestras in that era in theaters, down in the orchestra pit. And they pulled in the spotlight so it was tight on Houdini's face. And every time one of the needles would pop out, the guy in the orchestra with a triangle would go ding. So you'd hear a drum rolling, and then every so often a ding, ding, ding. You know, for 50 of these, it really must have looked astounding. Teller of Penn and Teller does it today in their, doesn't do it every show, but I've seen them do it in their Vegas show.
Interesting. Is that dangerous, doing that? Could something go wrong?
Yes, it could.
now you really...
I would recommend a person trying it without thoroughly researching all the different methods that could be used.
Now, you mentioned when you were a kid, you did the razor blade.
Yeah.
I mean, did you actually swallow the razor blade?
I won't answer that question, but I will say I bought them from a magic shop.
Okay. I was worried you could have performed a tonsil, removed your tonsils that way.
That would have been a good idea. That would have been much better, but I probably wouldn't have gotten ice cream after the surgery.
No,
another nice story, another quick story about the needles in Houdini. One night, he was performing in New York. He got a guy up on stage, not knowing the guy was an actor. And he handed the guy the flashlight, and Houdini says, you know, did you see anything in my mouth? The guy turns to the audience and says, pyorrhea. Well, what he didn't know is it was Groucho Marx. And the reason he didn't recognize him is because in their Broadway, before they became film actors, in their vaudeville and Broadway era, the mustache and eyebrows were fake. You know, he removed them after every performance, so he doesn't look like Groucho Marx without those glasses, those eyebrows, or mustache. But then, of course, the audience realized who it was by the voice. But it was a legend. It's not a legend, but it's a story that's come down through us in the magic world.
Well, you know how funny that would have been, too. I mean, to say what pyorrhea. I think that would have taken the guy by shock, and the audience would just cracked up. You know, that is so crazy.
Actually, what the good part is that the needles were not already in his mouth, or he might have actually swallowed them before he was supposed to.
I always would be scared about the thread breaking.
Oh. Wow. I wouldn't mind swallowing thread, but the thought of the pointy needles going individually down, I don't even want to think about that.
Well, especially when you're pulling them out. Who knows what you might have? If you had fish for lunch, you might pull a fish head out. I don't know. Hey,
well, it would be a good way to floss your teeth at the same time.
Yeah, that too. Anyway, well, I'll tell you one thing. If you did that, you wouldn't have a girlfriend or a wife very long. Anyway, you have some scary stories for us.
Yes, I'm working now on a second edition for my very first book that I did for Globe Pequot Press back in 1999. They had me doing another collection of stories of haunted highways, which is what you asked for tonight. And at the moment, I'm working on the Upper Midwest. So that's where our stories are going to come from tonight.
Okay, great.
So listeners, especially in the from Colorado out to Idaho and Wyoming, might want to lean in a little bit to hear some of these stories.
Okay, let's get going. I got my backup light just in case the power goes out and I lose the lighting. I am ready to go.
Okay, well, I'm going to start. My brother may be listening tonight. Hi, brother. Who, for a time, lived and worked in Idaho. And there is a town about 70 miles south of Boise named Silver City. It was founded in 1864, like so many mining camps of that period. Now, this is actually before the California Gold Rush. But silver was discovered, and some gold, but mostly silver. Lots of people flocked to the area, and pretty soon a mining camp became a town, which only had about 75 buildings, but it wound up having at its biggest, its zenith, about 2,500 people. And that didn't really include the miners, because the people who had found the town were the people who were the bankers, the tradesmen, the restaurants, you know, all of the businesses that would come to town to cater to the miners who were up in the hills. The problem is, this town was in a valley in a mountain ridge over 6,000 feet up in the air. I mean, in elevation. Now, Boise's at about 2,300 feet elevation. So I'm sure I'm going to say this wrong, but they were in the Owyhee Mountains. They're O-W-Y-N-E-E. I apologize to anyone from Idaho who just had to suffer me trying to pronounce that. There is one road that goes up there, obviously, called Silver City Road. It's only about 20 miles long, but let me describe it to you, because it's part of the haunting story. It's a single lane, very few turnoffs, a lot of curves, but also about a half a dozen hairpin bends. It's not straight up and down. You know, it goes up a little, down a little, up and down, and it goes up at points almost to 7,000 feet.
Wow.
The final decline, or descent rather, from, it's called the New York Grade, from New York Summit down into the valley to Silver City, probably would be a grade today that there'd be a truck turnoff, emergency turnoff lane or two. But of course, this is a dirt road. It's dirt and pounded gravel, but of course it's loosely kicked up. Only the first 6 miles have since been paved. So anyway, after the rush was over by the 1890s, Idaho got its statehood in 1892. By that time, the silver was depleted from all the mines, and with no jobs, most people had left town, but it's never been deserted. It's called a ghost town, but it's never been completely unoccupied. And in the 70s, there was a renaissance when the 25 or so full-time residents restored their houses. It's now kind of a really out-of-the-way tourist destination. And, of course, it wasn't until that started that we started getting the ghost stories coming back from the people who visited.
Ooh, are they scary ones?
Because the people that they, who would be attracted to that sort of attraction, assumed that all of these spirits that they were seeing were flesh and blood actors dressed in costumes from the time of the 1860s and 70s, playing the parts. So whenever they'd go to speak to them, you know, they, the ghosts, of course, never responded or disappeared right in front of their eyes. And let me tell a few of them, because now that I've found out about it, I'm going to go myself. What is the, was and is the only hotel in town, the Idaho Hotel, has at least four ghosts. One of the managers, who is always seen in a tuxedo. Two men apparently at some point during the mining era got into a big argument over a claim, drew guns, and shot each other on the front steps of the hotel.
Oh, wow.
They recreate that every so often on the front steps of the town. And you can see why you'd think this was like a recreation like they do today at the OK Corral in Tombstone, Arizona. But no, people go up in Russia to help them, and they disappear. There's also a woman who is dressed in white lace, who will appear in, they haven't been able to find records of who might have stayed there, but she appears in one or more of the guest rooms, and every so often people will see her from the road. They'll look up, and she's standing on the balcony that goes around the outside of the upper level. And that's just the beginning of what this place has. There are people will go up and risk themselves in investigating some of the old mines. And I say that because they haven't been sealed off, most of them. And people have seen phantoms of long gone miners. And there are three cemeteries in town.
Okay, Tom. Now, Tom, yep. We got to hold off about on the three cemeteries. We need to take like a 1 minute break. So we'll
That's
be back
good
with Tom.
To make people come back.
Yeah. Well, like cliffhanger. So we'll be right back with Tom. So stay tuned.
Daytime, she's a girl. I think she's nice. In the morning, she's a vision. Her Greek statue reflection starts to speak.
Do you have a paranormal story you want to share on Night Dreams Talk Radio? You could be a guest. Email us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com.
You can advertise your business on Night Dreams Talk Radio, and you will be heard worldwide. Why not contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com?
From the compound in beautiful Gig Harbor, Washington, Night Dreams Talk Radio presents your host, Gary Anderson.
And we are back with some scary ghost stories. Tom, well, you mentioned there were three cemeteries there. How far,
yes,
do you know how far back?
Obviously, there were, you know, it's very risky working in the mine, so there were fatalities. And one particular cemetery was just for the Chinese laborers, just as they were brought over from Asia to help construct the railroads in the West, so too they were taken up to help with the prospecting in the mines. And it's very weird just looking at the cemetery today, because There are only three bodies still left in the cemetery. All of the other, the graves are, the ground is depressed because the bodies were exhumed and sent back to China. But they didn't, when they refilled the graves, they didn't put enough extra dirt in. So now there's just a whole bunch of these little, you know, hollows through the cemetery. But people see the ghosts of these particular workmen who were wearing Chinese garb of that era in that particular cemetery.
Oh, wow.
But even the Silver City Road that I mentioned, after it gets into town, it becomes the lane through town. There's a boy and a girl, a young boy and girl, down on their hands and knees playing marbles in the middle of one of the dust lanes. And they've been seen all over town, not just that one roadway. And then there's a ghost that's a real mystery. They've given her the name, I don't know why they gave her the name Alice, but she's now known as Screaming Alice. And they don't so much see her as they hear a woman scream echoing through town. The story that it's attached to is Alice's whole family died of one of the diseases, whether it was typhoid or one of the others that swept through town in the early West. She was the only survivor, and she booked a stagecoach passage out of town. But after the stagecoach was departed, they discovered that her luggage was still there, and then checked by telegraph with the stagecoach company, and she had never boarded it. She was never found again, and it's not exactly a kind of place up in the mountains that you'll walk out of. So no one knows whatever happened to her physically, but they think that's who Scream is that they're hearing now through the valley. And if that's not enough, one more story about the road.
Uh-oh.
Up in the mountains, and this isn't a ghost story. This is one of those weird, Bigfootish type stories. They say that the caves, a lot of the caves that dot the mountainside, some of which were mines, but most were false starts, are inhabited by a strange race of miniature people, dwarves, I guess you'd say. They're only about 2 foot tall. They are always naked. They have long tails stretching out of the back of them like alligators, but they, I guess, more like a horse tail than an alligator tail. But they're long enough that they can actually, when they want to move quickly, they can actually pick them up and coil them around their bodies and carry them with them so they can get up speed. And they're very muscular little guys, and ugly. I mean, they're hideous creatures. And, of course, they attack humans. Otherwise, I wouldn't bother telling you the story. And no one would have seen them. And the scariest part is their favorite snack food is little children,
Ooh. They
say. So, if you're now looking for a summer vacation, now that COVID is letting us out of doors, and you want to go up to Silver City in Idaho, and you take the kids, once you get up in the mountains, if they get out, if you do a turnover and look out for the scenery, don't let them out of your sight.
I wouldn't. They might be gone really fast.
They might be gone.
Barbecue time.
Mm-mm-mm.
Hmm.
So let's go a little north of that.
Okay.
Well, actually, northeast, I guess it is. Yeah, over into Wyoming.
Okay.
Well, no, Montana immediately, but then Wyoming's over there as well. There is an area along State Route 70 in the south part of the state, very close to the Colorado border, which is within Medicine Bow National Forest. It's up in the mountains enough that it's closed during the wintertime. And this stretch of road, the 58-mile-long Wyoming Highway, which is Wyoming 70, goes through a gap in the mountains that it actually crosses the Continental Divide at that point. Back in the, before the Civil War, 1840s, there was a big skirmish between the fur trappers and the Native Americans there. Matter of fact, just a few years ago, sometime in the 2000s, within the last decade, Wyoming has designated that particular stretch of highway the Battle Pass Scenic Highway. In any case, there are two particular hauntings on about a 15-mile stretch just by the divide that I find particularly interesting. One is of a prospector who sometime in the 1880s was rigging dynamite at a... I'm going to stop right here. This is one of those stories of the hundreds of stories of lost mines in the Rocky Mountains or any mountains where someone has found a fortune, he goes into town to tell people about it, and then can't find it again. Or he dies and the people are still looking for the treasure. Well, in this case, the prospector blew himself up with dynamite. I don't know why I'm laughing when I say that, but it wasn't that he forgot where it was. He wasn't there anymore. And his ghost started showing up almost immediately to the stagecoaches that went over that part of the highway. For those who were completists, it was the Scribner stage line. I have a little note here. In any case, when he appears, he'll be walking just on the side of the road, and how the driver back then used to know that it was a ghost is this prospector guy would turn directly and walk straight through the horses, the team of horses, to the other side of the road. Sightings are rare today, but he still does show up. He does not walk through cars, but people in cars do see him. As a matter of fact, people who have seen him have been include people from the Forest Service. And what legend now says is that because of where he's passing, they believe that he's searching not for his mine, but folklore says he's looking for his grave, which is ironic because he doesn't have one.
No, he wouldn't, would he?
So why he would be up on the pass instead of down in the valley, I don't know. But in that same era, is a story in Slaughterhouse Gulch. There was an account of three men who had found a claim. They had a cabin, which now is known as Lost Cabin Mine, because they found the foundations of the cabin, but have never found the mine. They were attacked by a band of Native Americans. Two of the men were instantly killed. The other survived and escaped into the forest. But he went so far and, of course, wasn't really worried about where he was going on the way out. He never found his way back to the clearing and the cabin. Now, it's said that the two men who were killed are probably back down in the valley guarding the entrance of the mine, wherever that might be. But the other prospector also walks up on Wyoming Highway 70 at night on the old Prospector's Road, or Slaughterhouse Gulch Road, I guess you'd call it. But so that one interests me up in Wyoming. There are a couple more up near the Tetons. I'll let you decide. Where shall we go next? Would you like to go to, I'll give you a pick here. Nebraska, okay. Iowa, or Colorado?
Well, since I always make jokes about Nebraska, sorry, people. Let's go to Nebraska. You know, I used to do is, well, I had a girlfriend before I met my wife, and I kept telling her, we're going to move to, when we get married, we're going to move to Nebraska. And she goes, why Nebraska? I said, well, I want to grow corn. Why do you want to grow corn? I want to make a corn cob pipe. Anyway, let's go to Nebraska here.
Or is it because you wanted to get into radio there and you wanted to be a man outstanding in your field?
Well, in Nebraska.
That's
probably
the old Nebraska joke that I used to hear.
Yeah, if you want to go into broadcasting, go to Nebraska back 40 years ago and you'd be, well, talking to 8 or 9 people at least. Okay, let's go to Nebraska here.
Well, you know who famously left Nebraska to go into broadcasting? Johnny Carson was from Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. So, and I love Nebraska. There's some beautiful countryside from the flats going up into the Rockies area, into the west. So let's talk about something that's down by the Kansas border.
Or is okay.
It up?
Okay.
Up, down, up, down. Kansas-Nebraska Act. Oh, one of the two ways. Near Kansas. It's on the border with Kansas. And ALMA, A-L-M-A, was founded by the railroad in 1873. So, of course, it kind of sprang up just because the railroad was there, you know, and it was where it would be good to make a convenient stop. It's not that the railroad wanted to go. It was linking, you know, Lincoln and Omaha or something, and ALMA was along the way. In any case, the town itself is on a grid pattern, and there's a ghost of a female who strolls the streets at night. That I mentioned, there's only around 1,200 residents, so it's really a town, not a city, who is now called the ALMA Hitchhiker. She doesn't seem to favor any part of the road or even the sidewalk, but she is always dressed in a long black robe. Now, she doesn't show up much today, but she was regularly seen last century, up until about the middle of the century. So I would, if I had to make a guess, it probably would have been from the pioneer days, but she's not dressed as a pioneer. So they don't really know who she might be. Now, over in Nebraska City, one of the roads is haunted. Locals recall it the Seven Sisters Road, but its real name is L Road, L as in Larry. A gruesome series of murders took place there, and the victims now haunt this stretch of road. The story goes that there was a farmer had 7 daughters. It sounds like I'm starting a joke, right? A salesman joke. But no, there was a farmer who had 7 daughters and a son, and they lived in a house somewhere along Seven Sisters Road, but they're not exactly sure where. And one night, one of the two men murdered all 7 of the sisters.
Oh, wow.
Now, in the most common version of the tale, it was the son. But he and his father got into a big argument, and the son stormed out of the house, but he hid nearby. He waited for his father to go into town, and, I mean, he must have gone insane because the arguments were with his father, not with his sisters. But because it was her brother, he was able to gather them all together. He tied them all up, and one at a time, he would take them out to one of the, like the 7 hills of Rome. There were 7 mounds around that property, and he would take one of them up and hanged each one individually.
Ooh.
Now, this is the reason why I find this a great story is not only can they not find the house, but Nebraska's pretty flat. And there aren't, in that part of the state, very many what you would call hills. You know, there might be a round, a little rise of a mound on a field, but seven mounds that just conveniently each had a hanging tree on them, or a tree capable of hanging someone, yet that's the story. And the haunting, the girls never show up. They never manifest. But people driving down L Road will hear their screaming all along the route. And many times on that short stretch, the cars will stall or have electrical problems on that road, such as the headlights dimming or going out completely. Whichever it is, if you ever find yourself on that road, it's probably best not to linger too long to find out what's causing the problem. I'd get out of that area pretty quickly.
Oh, I would. I'd be out of there before you could count to three.
You know, now, see, that's one of the things I love to do when writing these ghost books is I will hear a story like that, and then I will go back to try to research who these people were and whether it's even possible, you know, what's it based on? What is the legend based on? Especially when the stories are so different. When there's so many variations of a story, like the lost cabin mine in Wyoming that I mentioned, only about 200 miles south in another set of mountains, there is an almost identical story about an Indian raid on three guys who were in a mining cabin. But that story, it doesn't end in a ghost story. It's just that there was this, you know, skirmish and battle, and the guys got killed. And the cabin's still there, and no one knows where their mine was. I haven't been able to find it. But I find that interesting that so close, also in a mountain range or mountainous area, there is an almost identical story. But the only reason we remember the first one is because there were ghosts involved.
Oh, yeah.
Now, were there ghosts on the other story too, but people dismissed it and it never stuck? Those are the kind of things I love to sort out. And why my editor is always saying, when am I getting the book?
Well, you know, Tom, our time is running by real fast. Do you have a trucker ghost story? Because we have a lot of truckers that listen to the show.
Let's try one. On, I do, because I knew we talked about that. This one, Highway 93,
okay,
out of Golden, Colorado. It originally was not a road; it was a railroad, a 19-mile road outside of Golden, between US 6. And State Highway 119 in Boulder, just east of the Rockies. It used to have a railroad track. When it was removed, they paved it, and it became a road. And it one of their locomotives struck a man, back in 1881. There was a fatality of the locomotive striking a man near, let me see if I'm reading this right, Van Bibber Creek. And his body was thrown into the bush. The only thing they ever found was his hat. But almost immediately, the ghost of a man matching his description, wearing the same style derby hat, started to materialize on the tracks, and back then, inside the rail cars. After the tracks were torn up and replaced by State Highway 93, he now appears on the roadway. And people know, have a warning when he's going to materialize, because they are suddenly enveloped in fog. And they're not going by a bog, or it's not a misty night. It's just like they're driving into a cloud hovering over the earth through fog. And on somewhere in there or on the other side, they will often see the man. And even if they don't see him, they're said to feel the anxiety that someone is watching me. Someone's out there in this mist staring at me that I can't see. So that's just outside of Golden, and I'm sure you have many trucker listeners who do that route.
Oh, yeah. You know, I get a lot of scary stories. I used to forward them to you from truckers. You know, they'll be out in the middle of nowhere, and they see people walking on the side of the road. You know,
I would love that. That would probably make a when I was writing up this story about these little the dwarf ogre things up in the mountains, I was telling my friend this story, and I said, there's so much to tell about them that's another book for another time.
Oh, it sounds like it, yeah.
And maybe trucker stories alone, because my father was a long-distance tractor-trailer driver, and even though we discussed a UFO that he had seen, we never discussed whether he had ever seen any other kind of paranormal activity. And he's, of course, now deceased. But I would love to get any of those stories that come across your desk or airwaves. Let me know about them. Maybe we can do haunted. Haunted truckers isn't good. Haunted
byways.
We'll come up with a good title for them.
Yeah, haunted byways. Well, hey, Tom, how can they find your books? And do you have a website or any Facebook or anything?
The best way to find them is, I hate to plug them even more, but Amazon. I shouldn't say I hate to plug them, since they sell all my books, but they are kind of consuming the bookstore market.
Well, they also are consuming the
type in my
radio
name,
shows, too.
Tom Ogden. Now, there are two of us. There's also a professional drummer. Put in Tom Ogden Ghosts, and you will come up with a whole page or two of all of the titles, because I now have out 15 books with different publishers.
Oh, wow, Tom. Yeah, you mentioned Amazon, too. You know, Amazon now, you know, for the last 6 months, they're carrying, like, podcasts and radio shows, too.
Yes.
They're everywhere. You know what? The head of Amazon on the 22nd or 23rd of this July is going to go up in a rocket ship with two other people.
I saw that. Didn't he just resign from the chairmanship? I wonder if he did that in advance just in case.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't put me in a capsule without an astronaut pilot.
I would love to do it, but not as the first one on a civilian rocket ship.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not going to mention the other company, but for a long time, their rockets would go up, and when they came to land, they blew up. So, yep. I don't know. It's not my idea of a great blowjob.
Well, so did NASA's for a long time before they became manned.
Yeah.
Well, we have 100 years or 75, 80 years of building rockets now that it's a little less likely they're going to explode.
Oh, yeah. I still am not
that would be a haunted space.
Haunted space, yeah. There is. You know, there's a Russian astronaut still going around the Earth. Anyway, Tom, you take care. Again, I want to thank you for coming back on, and back in a few months from now, we can get you back on again. How's that?
That sounds great. Thanks for inviting me back, Gary and James. Thank you.
Okay, Tom, you have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, James, do you have a couple books you can mention on the show?
I sure do. One of the books is The Totally Ninja Raccoons Meet the Weird and Wacky Werewolf, and that is by our friend Kevin Coleach. And that is a great book for kids and grandkids, seriously. Another book we got is Ghost and Me, and that is by Kevin Killian, and that is a great book as well. And another book that we have on is, it's called Asteroids, A Bridge to Nowhere by Mr. Mike McCoy.
Oh, yeah.
These are some great books.
It sounds like it, too. And you can check our website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com. There is a ton of books there. All you have to do is just click on the book. It'll give you information, and then you can order naturally through Amazon through that link. So, that, you know, and plus, check out our website. All our past shows are on there. It won't cost you anything to listen to them. Also, well, the YouTube videos are on there, too. So, plus a whole bunch of information and who our guest is. So please check our website out. Well, James, you know, the week just went by so freaking fast. I still keep thinking about that $20 gold piece, that double eagle, 1933, the last one ever minted. A $20 gold piece fetched $18.9 million. I know I mentioned it the last 2 days, but I tell you what, you know, I went through all my penny banks and all that stuff trying to find coins and stuff. Nah, after eight kids, you know what? Some of the old double eagle coins I had that were left to me from my grandmother, they evidently were used for buying candy at one point. So,
yeah. You know, back in the old days, they actually paid the coal miners right up into the 20s with gold pieces. Times have changed.
Oh, yeah. I sure would like to have those gold pieces. Anyway, till Tuesday, everybody have a good one. Again, we were a few minutes late getting on because I hit the wrong button, and I apologize. Everybody have a great one. Again, tell your friends about Night Dreams Talk Radio, and, well, stay out of trouble, and we'll catch you later.